here with my, have no disclosures, nothing to disclose this morning. What I'm going to present today was funded by the Rob Ward Johnson Foundation Nurse Faculty Scholars Program, and I just want to thank all of the women who participated. I'll tell you a little bit about what we're doing and what we wanted to do with this particular study. First, anybody wearing a wearable activity monitor? This might fit. Anybody wearing one? Just a couple people. You have yours too. So, to give you some context for it, so my hotel is down St. Charles, a mile and a half, and I've walked 3,800 steps. So I walked from there this morning. 3,800 steps, just some context of sort of where we are, which is a lot for me at this point by 8:30 in the morning. My work really focuses on women as they come out of incarceration, usually in transitional housing facilities, halfway houses, three-quarter way houses. To provide some broad context, the people that I work with are a much greater risk of comorbidity and death than that of the general population. The women especially go in with incredibly complicated histories. They have more health problems, physical and psychiatric mental health problems than both the general population and incarcerated men. This is a group that is dealing with incredibly complex issues. I can't underscore that enough about where we start and sort of baseline. The question comes up about why I look at physical activity and self-monitoring. I think that this is, I don't have to sell this group on physical activity, obviously, the body of literature, but what it does for both physical and mental health, especially, which is of interest to me, is significant. And self-monitoring, as I'm sure everybody knows, has always been sort of the gold standard about intervention. It is the basis for a lot of interventions, paper logs to electronic monitoring, those kinds of issues, that idea. And this idea of what's being called self-quantifying is a huge part of direct-to-consumer products. So if you have a new iPhone, it does it automatically. The wearable devices like the Fitbit and a million others. Nike has one. There's a million of them. This is all about sort of looking at this quantifying what happens in that way. It monitors your sleep at night. It does the steps. It does the calories. Those kinds of things. Big market very popular direct-to-consumer approach. So the question came up for me, and I personally sort of respond to the idea of self-monitoring. My research interests are about sort of taking some of these approaches and using them in the women that I'm interested in serving who are at great risk. There are four responses I get in general to this. One is people get it and understand. The second is that the needs of this particular population are so significant and complex that starting by looking at something like this is not a good idea. We have to look at sort of the big structural issues. We can't, that maybe we shouldn't be thinking about things like physical activity at this point. Let's think about, the other big issues. The third is that people say they won't wear them, they're not interested, not going to have them, they're going to lose them, they're going to sell them. That kind of stuff comes up all the time. But like, this is just not a thing that works. And then the fourth one that was sort of interesting about this is the idea of monitoring with a group that's coming out of jail and prison. The idea would be like, they're just not going to really buck against being monitored as well. The idea of monitoring sort of, even from a, Foucauldian response of the panopticon about, sort of the gaze that happens, the women are going to say, I don't want to be monitored in this way. They're not going to like it. So this idea of using technology to advance health is important. And we can't continue to leave out vulnerable populations because of these issues and the things that are going on. So this study came about really as a feasibility study to say, is it feasible to use a device like this, direct-to-consumer device with this particular population? Will they like it? Will they use it? What will happen? And how will they feel about being tracked? And then sort of what is the physical activity of women at this particular stage? What's happening with them? How much are they moving around? So that's what we wanted to look at in this particular study. Will they use it? Does it make sense? Will they reject the idea of it? Will they like it? And then where is their physical activity? So we did a descriptive study. We bought a dozen of the Fitbits and just asked people to wear them for a week. Wear it for a week, see what happens, see if you like it, see how you respond to it. We'll come back and talk to you about it. We did it a couple of times. We went and talked to people. We gave no instructions on level of activity. We didn't tell anybody to increase their activity. We didn't talk about it at all. We just sort of said, here's what it is. This is what we want you to do. We want you to try it out and see what happens for a week. We collected data baseline and then after a week just to see what would happen in that way. And obviously the intention was to test initial response, to see if it would be worth investing in these. Not, you know, they're not inexpensive devices. They are about $120 a piece. The ones that have the accelerometers in it, that sort of thing, you can get them for about $100. So it's not, not a significant amount of money, but it is the question about whether or not we want to invest in that way. So we were looking at women who were in a transitional facility. That means they're living in a facility for some period of time after incarceration. They had to be 18 years of older, and we just asked that they are going to be there for at least 2 weeks. As long as you're going to be there for 2 weeks, you can try this out. We enrolled 23 women, and the analysis that you're going to see is 21 women. Two of our participants were not able to complete the study. One went into the hospital. The other was released from the facility unexpectedly. both returned the devices, and both were very clear about it and had been excited to try and do it. So we ended up with 21 women in the analysis. The breakdown for demographics, just to give you a sense of who it is in this population, is about 60% white, a third African American, which is about the trends for this Western Pennsylvania area. We cover a lot of Appalachia and issues, and then some of the rural areas and Pittsburgh itself. The average age is around 38, which is about where you would expect for women in these transitional facilities. It's older than you might think. These are women who have had most often repeated incarcerations. In this case, a mean of about 6.5 over the period of their life. They have been in and out, and if you're in a transitional facility, it usually means you've been in and out and are trying to get into work release or doing program in that way. We have a very high, and I've done 6 or 7 studies. In our area, we have a very high high school graduation rate and years of formal education, which is fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. We also have, you'll see, a really high insurance rate because of the programming that's available in Pennsylvania, which is one thing we've done really well. About 11 of these women, about 50%, were currently working, which is part of terms of release in these situations. About 80% reported a current health problem, 85% taking a medication. 80% have health insurance. Again, due to efforts in the area, both related to the Affordable Care Act and prior to that, about getting people on insurance specifically, and we had some second chance money in the area, which goes a long way towards doing second chance money, which is a federal program for reentry, and focused on health insurance. We have had a lot of success in the area making sure people do that. About 60% have a substance abuse history and 75% with a current primary care provider. We looked at several different things. So we used the Fitbit device. We used the Pfaffenberger, which I'm not going to report on today. It's a complicated questionnaire just to see how their subjective and theoretically objective measures of physical activity sort of matched up, but we'll talk about that another time. We also asked them to do a steps log every day, and then we did some feasibility and acceptability interviews. Again, we're looking at, will they use it? Did they refuse to be in the study? Did they lose the devices? Technical problems, issues around that. We gave them very specific instructions to work the Fitbit. It's quite easy. The reason that I chose this one, so some people have the Fitbit that doesn't have a display, so you have to have a phone or a device in order to see your steps. This one does have a display. When you press it, it gives you time, steps, miles, calories, flight of stairs, and active minutes over time, so you can see it. This device was also recalled. In the process of this. If you're familiar with it, this is the one that gave people the nickel allergy on it. So 2 weeks into this, it was on the news as giving people rashes, and the women saw that. It was a really interesting process. It didn't give people rashes until they'd been wearing it for multiple weeks, so it didn't affect any of the women that we'd had. We had to send them all back at the end of it, which was interesting, and the new one just came out, which also does the same thing. It was an interesting dimension to the study. We told them, don't immerse it in water, check whatever steps you want. And again, we didn't give any information about increasing activity or anything. It was just like, let's see how much you're walking and what's happening. So what happened? The feasibility study, the sample was very easily achieved. People are very motivated to participate. We didn't have any trouble. We had a long list of people who wanted to come. The potential sample is about 200 living in this particular facility at any time, and we had people anxious to jump in. We had no recruiter problems. I got all my devices back, and they were in fantastic condition. People were very interested and motivated to use them. This included two women who were not able to participate, but they were very motivated to bring the device back, which was fantastic. We didn't have any battery power issues. The battery on this particular device lasts about 10 days. There were no technical problems. Again, when you get into longer term things, we're going to have to talk about the technology around it, so how it interfaces with phones and how to keep it charged and things like that. One of the other considerations we would have would be around problems with facility or property control. So when you're living in a transitional place, it's like, where did you get that? Where did that come from? What's yours? What happens in that way? And we didn't have any issues around that. We had a lot of interest from staff who wanted their own equipment. That was mostly what happened. So the acceptability of these devices was incredibly high. 20 out of 21 of the women used the device all 7 days, which was sort of incredible. And it was one person who used it for 5 of the 7 days, which was just amazing to me. They were very, very engaged in this study and in using the device. They all reported checking the device periodically through the day, wanting to look at the numbers, checking it, obsessively checking it. If you have one, you sort of know you get into the habit of checking it. People in the post-interviews reported checking it more. As the week went on, and walking a little bit more to get to 10,000. This particular device, when you get to 10,000 steps, buzzes and sets off little fireworks on it, which was a lovely thing that several people mentioned. There were no initial concerns about monitoring. We specifically said, any concerns about me monitoring? None. No participants reported feeling self-conscious. Several said that lots of people asked them about it, and they sort of described what it was. A couple of people sort of laughed and said they were being sent home on work release, and this was the device that was going to monitor them. They were sort of joking about it because it's a real thing. You know, this, if you've ever seen an ankle bracelet, this is a real thing that happens, but it was sort of a fun conversation. Every single participant, all 21, reported, yes, they liked using the Fitbit and would like to have one on their own, every one of them. They would like it to come in different colors, which it conveniently does now. So this is the daily activity of the 21 people in it. So I told you what I'd walked today, which is not insignificant. I mean, I walked from my hotel, which is a mile and a half away. The mean daily steps for these women is over 11,000 steps a day. When you get down to sort of what they're doing, they're walking virtually everywhere. This was not the winter. The range was between about 4,400 and 17,000 steps a day. That's the average. Single day ranges went from anywhere from zero, that one person who didn't use it a couple days, up to 25,000 steps. So 10,000 steps is estimated to be about 5 miles, a little bit less for women, a little bit more for men. So there are people walking 10 miles a day as they go to work or participate in the community or fill their obligations related to parole violations. The distance in mile then falls right below about 5 miles a day, walking about 5 miles a day, which is not insignificant and is above the 10,000 steps number that people talk about for what physical activity should be. The range went anywhere from 2 miles a day, so that's the least people are walking is 2 miles a day, which is a lot for most people. It really is. Up to 7 3/4. So also measures the number of floors that you walk. It's an accelerometer, sort of like what you have in the Wii. You have that at home. So this, and they were walking anywhere from 5 flights of stairs to 35 flights of stairs a day. And the average was 18, again, which is high for the general population. Very active minutes. This one surprised me even more than the steps did. So this measures just minutes where you're considered to be moving faster than slow walking. So this would be brisk walking, and the average was 25 minutes a day, which is very close to the 30 minutes a day that you would expect hope people would be able to get. They ranged anywhere from a minute to 62 minutes. Mostly they were reporting on the Pathenberg, which is what you say, how you do. A lot of brisk walking is what that looked like. So these were the results from the Fitbit data. The number of days with greater than 10,000 steps here, so these the number of people who had days with greater than 10,000 steps really fell into sort of two categories here. There were people here whose average was around 7,000. They had only one or two days with over 10,000 steps, but still at 7,000. So again, some context for that. I'm a university professor. I walk not a ton. I have a standing desk. And I, when I don't exercise, get about 5,000 to 6,000 steps in a day. So these women are surpassing that. The other group, which is about two-thirds of the group, 14 of the 21, were averaging more like 13,000 steps. They kind of fell into these two groups, people who walked a lot, people who didn't. Again, statistically, there's only 21 people. It's just an interesting snapshot of what happened here, what physical activity looks like. So my next goal was, of course, to look at the trajectory. So in my head, of course, they increased the number of steps over the week, and it made this like lovely line up, and it doesn't look like that.
Oh my God.
it doesn't have any, there's no sense to it or anything like that, which is, again, how it is for most people, right? This is what our days look like. Some days you walk more than others, and there's no predictability around it. Probably there is around work schedule for this particular group. Days where they have things they have to go do, appointments, things like that, which is true for everyone, right? So every day brings them different opportunities to walk a certain amount of steps. So no predictability there in terms of increasing. But again, we didn't ask them to increase numbers. We didn't ask them to do anything, just a monitoring thing. Okay, so what did we learn? So from my perspective, the design is both feasible and acceptable for this population. It makes tons of sense. The participants were all very engaged and interested. They wanted the devices. They wanted to talk about the devices. They were very interested in how many steps they went. Physical activity levels were quite high in this population. I knew they would be, because of my anecdotally talking with them, I didn't expect them to be over 10,000 steps, the mean to be over 10,000 steps a day, which is quite interesting. And the very active minutes maybe were less than optimal for many, but they're very close. Again, the devices were recalled, which was really interesting. It was an interesting piece of it, both in terms of the fact that it happened, there were absolutely no rashes reported. Again, it took several weeks for those things to happen. But also the women knew it. They knew about it, and they had been engaged in it, and they heard about it on the news, and they wanted to know more about it and the things that had happened, which was also quite interesting to me about sort of the engagement in the process and how they were talking about that and how these ideas about these direct-to-consumer devices and the news about it permeated into their lives as well. There's a possibility of selection bias in this recruitment, which I think is really important to note. People may have volunteered because they were more interested, all of those things. That's definitely always going to be an issue around studies where you talk about physical activity. And people who may need it, you know, or may be particularly not interested. But since we said that's what we're talking about, it's important to say that this sample may indeed be biased to those who are very interested in physical activity. I would say that to conclude sort of thoughts for today, there's a lot of promise in this idea of self-monitoring. I think that as we tie it theoretically to the idea of engagement in things like reflection and physical activity and some taking responsibility in those particular ways and where people are at this particular time in their life, they're trying to get their house in order in a lot of different ways upon reentry. And this study and some of the other ones that we've done, which are mostly about, you know, health and these things that reentry, people are very, very interested in these interventions. This is a primary focus for them. They understand how incarceration and life history has affected their health. They're getting a little bit older. They're starting to feel it. This is a primary interest and goal. These direct-to-consumer devices depend on some interesting technology, and so when you tie it to your phone, it gives you alerts about where you are, and you have 2 hours to get 5,000 more steps in. The women I'm working with don't have the access in the same way. This is solely about looking on here. There are different groups that may have, more and more people have smartphones, and so there's a possibility to do that, but some of the technology gaps may make full use difficult, which is reminiscent of almost everything we're trying to do as we move toward technology. How do we make this more available? How do we make it make more sense for the populations that are most vulnerable, at risk, and at need for these particular things? I just want to end with some thoughts about that I have myths and stereotypes about this population, I think, are significant barriers to implementing health interventions. This idea, not interested, not able, not focused on this area of their lives, become the reasons why we don't do studies and programs focusing on the things that we're all interested in. My experience has been, after working with this population for 10 years, on the inside and the outside, we all have the same health goals, and that's just the reality of it, which sounds very Pollyanna. We need to have access to the same developments of technology that move health and ideals of health forward. How the availability of the technology, the access to the technology, and our willingness to employ the technology needs to be available to all people. And I would argue, for the most vulnerable, that's even more of a reason to make it more available and often and in interesting and engaging ways, because that's what we all deserve as we seek out our best opportunities